my friends, and welcome to another Samples podcast. I'm David Hayward. I want to expand a little bit on the Z theory that I was talking about over the past few weeks, and I've been sending them out in our Sunday lap letters, and so today I'm going to talk about the second part in this podcast. So a couple of weeks ago, I sent out a letter with a one-page summary of what I've called the Z theory, and I plan on changing the name to something warmer and friendlier and less boring, so stay tuned for that. I will remind you of the dream that prompted the Z theory in the first place. So here's the dream. There's a huge waterfall. Oceans of water pour over the rim of the cliff. The water tumbles down and explodes at the bottom. The deluge spreads over the land, covering and consuming everything. There is a huge waterfall. Oceans of water pour over the rim of the cliff. The water tumbles down and explodes at the bottom. The deluge spreads over the land, covering and consuming everything. So last week I sent our Sunday letter with an explanation of the first part, the water over the top of the rim, that which we cannot see. I've heard back from many of you, and I'm really thankful for that you found it helpful, and I appreciate the responses. So I really do. It helps encourage me and to keep me going. So this week I want to describe the second part, that is the water pouring down over the rim. And this is the part that we can finally see. It's the oceans of water tumbling down. The water tumbles down and explodes at the bottom. This whole visible part of the waterfalls is the most spectacular. It is a spectacle. If you've ever seen a waterfall, a huge one, like I'm talking Victoria Falls or Niagara Falls, to us it is the overwhelming, thunderous evidence that there is an unlimited supply of water above the rim. Now, perhaps, you know, if we were primitive and superstitious, we could believe that there was a water god up there that we were terrified of, spewing water out of his mouth, or maybe peeing it over the side. We don't know, because we can't see it. But now, even though we haven't seen it, we are smarter and we're less superstitious. We can fairly guess it is a huge river, infinitely fed with rain, mountain snows, springs, lakes, which are in turn fed by rain, mist, and dew, snow. But for now, all we see and smell and taste and hear and even feel is the great downpour of water. Now, this is the evidence we have of what is above the rim. The infinite and invisible is now finite and visible. This is the revelation of the Holy Other, the exposure, the incarnation of the mystery, the transmission of truth, the manifestation of the unknown. It's the discoveries of science. It is the encounter and reception of the unknown, now known, the mysterious, now perceived. So this is what Christians would call the Christ, Jesus, Jews, the Torah, Buddhists, the Buddha, scientific discovery for scientists, revelation, the condescension, the manifestation, the incarnation, transmission, the embodiment, the coming down, the coming out. I remember long ago, Lisa and I were dating, and we met at Bible College, Springfield, Missouri. We went down to visit my dad's family in California. They all lived in Long Beach and Lakewood, and I had a cousin there. I had several cousins, but one in particular I really loved as a good friend. And Lisa and I were in Bible College, so studying theology and all that. And my cousin had lots to talk about. She'd experienced a lot of pain in her life, in her family. And although everyone down there seemed to be Christian, and we went to a huge Baptist church down there, she couldn't believe everything that was being dished out to her. She wasn't sure she believed in God, heaven, hell. She was going through huge intellectual change at such an early age. And I remember how deeply affected I was by this. I loved her so much, not just as a cousin, but as a friend. And she was and is a beautiful person who'd suffered so much and just wouldn't believe pat answers. She rejected the simplistic faith of our family. So she was considered, you know, rebellious and troubled teen kind of a thing. And I remember how tormented by the logical conclusion that she was going to hell because of her lack of faith and her questions. And I was like, how can this be? How can a God who claims to be love throw such a beautiful person in hell forever just because she didn't think according to what was considered correct theologically? I was angry about this and confused and very emotionally involved with this intellectual problem, and I was just 21 years old. Now, add to this intellectual problem the bigger picture that there are good Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, atheists, agnostics, nuns, you name it, along with my cousin. All of these people are good people, and are they going to hell even though God is love? So as you can see, I was getting deeper into intellectual trouble. What the fundamentalist mindset does is just simply draws the line and says, yes, you're going to hell, period. Simple, done. And you shut your ears and shut down your brain to keep out conflicting data. And I know many of you, if not all of you, have talked with fundamentalists. Maybe you were one yourself at one time. And it's very, very difficult to talk to a fundamentalist because they're just so concretized in their belief systems. Like, for instance, if you've seen those interviewed from, the Baptist church down south, I forget the name, just how dogmatic they are and everybody else is wrong. And, yep, you're going to hell. No, you're not going to hell. Yet you're going to hell. No, you're not going to hell. It's just maddening. But if you're not that way, maybe you are intellectually curious, and you will try to make sense of this. So I chose the latter. I chose to try to make sense of this. And I look back to that time as a huge turning point for me, because although I was to remain in the church for decades following this and even be a minister within it, my encounter with my cousin and the conundrum she caused changed my life, and it flung me into this quest to try to understand these two conflicting truths. Not just conflicting, but actually contradictory truths. And these two conflicting truths is God is love and you're going to hell if you're not a certain kind of believer, preferably a Bible-believing, born-again, conservative, fundamentalist, evangelical. And this is an impossible equation. I mean, it just cannot be figured. So thus began my search to understand something that is simply not understandable. It took me a very long time to come to the obvious conclusion that I cannot see or define what is above the rim. I can't see it or describe it. That is God, or whatever you call it. All I have to go by is the waterfalls pouring down. That is, all the testimonies that claim to describe and define it. Now, the tradition I was in was Christianity. It claims to have not only the best description of what is God, but the only valid one. And this is Jesus. Therefore, you have to fully subscribe to this Jesus in some way to be connected to God. You had to completely agree with Christianity's definition of God, that is Jesus, in order to be saved and go to heaven. Now, of course, there are as many varieties of this Jesus as there are religions in the world, and that just doesn't make it any easier, does it? So, then you have the Bible, which is the document, the holy book, that substantiates all this, that Christianity calls the Word, which obviously reflects Jesus, who is the Word became flesh. So there you have the total package. You have the witness, the physical manifestation of what we call God. So I spent years and years and years studying the Bible. I got my BA in college in Bible and theology. Then I got my master's in biblical theology. I studied Greek and Hebrew and even Aramaic, all the original biblical languages, so that I could try to understand this book that talked about Jesus. I was still stuck looking at the waterfalls from a Christian perspective, but I didn't realize it. And I was looking for the answer, the universal answer, you see, inside the Christian perspective, which I have come to find out it's impossible. Excuse me. I spent something like 30 years studying my brain out and trying to understand this huge problem. I studied Judaism, I studied Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, spiritualities of all kinds, and mystics. I studied science, and atheism, you name it, philosophy, quantum physics. I talked with Buddhist masters, philosophers, scholars, you name it, all in an attempt to understand this problem. Now, one way I did it was I tried to find everything that was similar to Christianity and other religions and philosophies and spiritualities, and it was an interesting quest. So, for example, I found so many similarities to what the Buddha taught and what Jesus taught, and there's the Korean Buddhist, Thich Nhat Hanh, who wrote something with Buddha and the Christ, and the similarities are remarkable, and I found them remarkable. Same with Muhammad and Jesus. But I was driving myself crazy because I always came back to the same place. If Jesus was the only way to God, then there's no, you know, that's the problem. Even if you were a Buddhist that talked like Jesus, if you didn't believe in Jesus, too damn bad, you know. Again, the problem was I was still looking at the waterfalls from my Christian perspective, and I did this for over 30 years. I'm telling you, I drove myself crazy. I drove my friends crazy. I drove my spiritual directors crazy. Drove Lisa crazy. It was years and years of years of intellectual torment, trying to harmonize all these religions and to find the key that unlocked them all. But there wasn't, because I was hopelessly caught within the Christian mindset and trying to find the key within Christianity and within the Bible. And so I gave up. I remember basically giving up. It was near the end of my ministry as a professional minister, and I was just fed up. I was just tired. It was in 2009, and I went to sleep. But then in the night, I had this dream of the waterfalls. In May of 2009, I woke up with a peaceful mind. I finally saw that what I thought was the problem wasn't the problem. I was the problem. My mind was the problem. I was believing my own thoughts. I finally saw that my mind was limiting. My perspective, my viewpoint, my paradigm, that was the issue. I finally saw that my perspective was a Christian one, and that I was looking at the revelation of what is invisible with Christian eyes. So as soon as I saw that my eyes were the problem, peace came to my mind. Theologically, stillness came, and it's never left. Now, I still struggle to articulate this, what's caused this peace or brought this peace. But there is definitely a stillness that came over my mind intellectually, theologically, however you want to call it. And my struggle now is to try to explain it and articulate it. But you see, I now knew that the Buddhists described their perspective on reality with Buddhist eyes. Jews with Jewish eyes, Muslim with Muslim eyes, Hindus with Hindu eyes, atheists with atheist eyes, and so on. We're all seeing and experiencing the same thing through our own filters. This suddenly gave me a profound respect for all perspectives and allowed me to humble myself with my Christian perspective to sit among all other perspectives on the same level. Now sure, I grant you, I do believe there are insufficient ways to explain reality and more sufficient. I believe there's more insightful and less insightful ways. I think there's more mature and less mature ways of describing reality. More superstitious and less superstitious, and on and on. More honest and less honest, yes, for sure. But we are all perspectives experiencing the same reality. Some like to say all paths lead to the same place. Well, now we might say there aren't all paths, just one path with different experiences and thoughts about this one path. Or even better, I like to say now there is no path. We're already there. So this is what the dream, you know, above the rim is that which we cannot see, and all kinds of theories about what that is. And our theories are fed by our observations, what we see and study and what's been revealed to us, our testimonies. And the testimonies abound in the thousands, from Christian to Buddhist to Hindu, whatever, about what this other or ungrounded ground or the source, unlimited infinite source, whatever this is, there's all kinds of explanations and theories about it based on our experiences, our studies, our observations, our perspectives. And so I appreciate you listening. I hope this helps a little bit. Next week, I look forward to talking about the third part, and that's where the water spreads out over the plain and covers and consumes everything. So bless you all, and I hope you're all well, and that you all enjoy happiness and love and peace. Goodbye, my friends.